everybody. Welcome to Reality Rehap Ups for this episode 4 of The Amazing Race Season 25. My name is Jessica Leese, and all season long I'm going to be bringing you interviews with various Amazing Race alumni, and for our first one of the season, I thought, who better to get than an individual we actually saw in the very first episode of Season 25, a man who has been associated with the show since the very beginning, the runner-up from season one, Mr. Frank Mesa. How are you doing today, Frank?
Very good, Jessica. Thank you for having me on. This is awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be talking to you today. You kind of fell off the fan radar for a lot of years, and now all of a sudden you show up in Times Square in episode one. How did that wind up happening?
Yeah, well, you know, I live in New York, so I'm a New Yorker, and I've been busy with career and family and all that, so I've been focusing on those things. So I did kind of fall off the radar, but when I heard that the race would be starting in Times Square, which is not too far from my office, I figured I would definitely come out and cheer everyone on, and see Phil and Bertram and Elise and company. So it was a really great experience seeing everyone and being there. It was really awesome.
And you got to play an active role in pointing people in the right direction.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny because I had no idea that there was going to be anything related to season one. And I was, to my surprise, I'm standing there and all the teams run up to me and start asking me where my race ended. And I was really surprised. I was so much shocked. But I think I gave them good direction because no one got lost.
Yeah, it seemed like they all went straight there. I was impressed that they all knew who you were.
Yeah, I was really impressed as well. Phil had made some comments that didn't show up on the show itself, but he did say we had some former racers there, and he mentioned a couple of people in the crowd because I was in one of the I was one of the former racers, but there were others, and then I was surprised that they knew who I was. So. Who knows? I mean, it goes back, 13 years ago I did it, so I guess people are really fans, they know.
Yeah, the thing, I was amazed when they showed them running up the steps, and, I was there, I was way off on the other end, so I didn't get to hear anything that Phil was saying, but when I watched it back, I saw them, the teams were running up to the top of the stairs, and one of them says to the other one, let's go talk to that guy who was on season one, and I'm thinking, in the moment, would I even know that? And,
right.
I've seen every season.
Sure. So I was surprised. I tell you, I was shocked. I couldn't believe that they knew who I was.
Yeah, and it was. I thought it was so wonderful that they actually that you managed to be there. And I talked to a few of the other racers, former racers who'd been there. It was just the whole atmosphere felt like such a love letter to people that have been following the show all along.
Yes, and that's what that really what it felt like. I mean, the love was in the air. I mean, we were taking pictures. I got a couple of pictures with Phil and with Bertram, and so it was really amazing. It was kind of the 25th or silver anniversary, being there, everyone being together, where it started in New York. It was really magical.
Yeah. Now, have you been following the show all along?
I've been on and off. Like I said, I've been very busy. Life is been somewhat of a roller coaster the past few years, but I have been following this season for sure, which is really spectacular. I think to see the differences. One of the things that I was a little resentful, obviously, as one of the first season. Now I notice that they win prizes. they win a leg, they win a car. They win a leg, they win a trip. I'm like, you have any idea what we had to do? Grumpy old man, what we had to do, we didn't get anything for our season, but it is what it is. But I'm happy for the franchise. I think it's amazing. I mean, when we started, unfortunately that year, before the second episode aired, 9/11 happened, and it was devastating, and the world was in a different place, and now, the franchises continue to grow and continue to show that, the world is, there's brotherhood in the world, and it's a small place, and people love to travel, and, in other words, the terrorists have not won. The show has shown that we can still travel, we can still be free, we can still be happy, we can still do the things we want to do in this world. So it's really beautiful.
Yeah, that, it's kind of amazing to remember that you guys filmed that show pre-9/11, and that seems like it was so long ago.
It was a different world. You know, I think about it, it was a different world altogether, you know. But, you know, like I said, you know, The Amazing Race has proven that, you know, no matter what, the concept and the challenges, you know, people are interested in them, and it just, it's, people love to see travel, people love to see different cultures, and that's what it provides. So I'm just honored that I was, you know, able to be one of the first ones, and, you know, I'll always take down in history as one of the people, the first people to make it around the world. You know, I take pride. I didn't win, but I crossed the finish line, and I was very proud of that.
Yeah. How did you get hooked up with the show in the first place?
It was just being here in New York City. You know, I don't know, maybe a little anecdote people don't know. It was just an open cast call that I went to. I think at the time, the show was called Global Summer Adventure. That was what the show, the producers or the production company or something, was called Global Summer Adventure, and morphed into The Amazing Race, obviously, before we started. But, yeah, it was just an open cast call. I think perhaps they felt that there was a compelling story between me and Margarita, who, you know, she's my ex-wife, and, you know, we were separated at the time, and, you know, it was going to give some flavor to the show, and you know, let's an open cast call, and just kept getting called back, and it was just a magical experience from the first day that we met the people at CBS Studios in Central Park South to the day that we crossed the finish line. It was just like a magical ride that you would just not believe is happening to you, you know, but it did happen, and it's amazing.
Yeah, and it's especially a unique experience because everyone else who was ever on the show after that went in knowing kind of what they were getting. And this show definitely has one of the bigger applicant pools, I think, of any reality show, just because it looks like such a cool experience. But you guys had no idea what you were getting into. Like, how much did you know about what was going to be happening to you?
We had no clue at all. Nothing whatsoever. I mean, we knew we'd be traveling. I mean, they, you know, the producers were very slick because, you know, we had our passports, and then, you know, we had a whole ton of visas in our passports. So, you know, we could kind of guess what countries we were going to, but we really didn't know because they filled the passports so many visas that, you know, if we went to, you know, 12 countries, we had 25 visas in our passports. So we had no idea which one of the countries we'd be going to. So that they threw us off across the board. And then, you know, we just didn't know. It was every single time we went somewhere, it was just a brand new wild experience. I mean, when we first landed in Zambia and we were all running towards Victoria Falls at full sprint, you know, it was very wet there and we're running as fast as we can. And there's something called the knife edge there. And it's really just the side of the falls where there's like no fence, there's nothing. And we almost ran off the side of the cliff over to the falls, like without any regard, because we were just so pumped with adrenaline and so excited and just trying to win. And, you know, so we just did not have any idea what to expect. And I mean, some of the tasks that we had to do, I mean, for me, I was a very fit person, particularly at that time. I mean, it was so strenuous that I felt in some cases that I was going to like pass out or die because it was just so hard to do, you know. But you know, it was like I said, it was just a ride of a lifetime. You know, never ever could I ever have imagined doing anything like that in my whole life.
Wow, that it's really hard to imagine, like someone who's just been watching it at home for all these years, like how intense the experience must be. And everyone says it's the hardest thing they've ever done, and also the most incredible. Do you think it's gotten easier over the years, or do you think everybody just goes into it still being that wiped out by it?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I noticed over the years, like, you know, the people are fitter, and meaning that, you know, you could tell them they're much more athletic. I mean, my season, there was an older, you know, kind of like an older couple. There was an older woman and her daughter, and there was and nobody was, you know, I mean, other than Robin Brennan, maybe myself, and I think that was it. I mean, other than that, there wasn't really many fit people on the show, and the tasks were very physically taxing when I was on the show. I notice now people are more fit physically, but the tasks the physical fitness doesn't help you with the tasks. Like it's you know, riding a bike with a cake on your lap, you know, doesn't necessarily take any, you know, exceptional physical fitness. So I don't think it's easier. I think it's different. I think they've made it harder because, you know, I look at, for instance, a dentist this season. You know, they are incredibly bright, you can tell. They are very fit. You know, they have the formula that you would think would get them, as they thought, you know, to be the most dominant team. At least on that show, but I mean, they think in the history, as it's in the history of the show. But to see how the task got them screwed up, you know, in this last episode, really, you know, it's just such a wild card. You just don't know, you know, what little thing will throw you off. I mean, you know, it's just, the producers are just so brilliant in how they continue to develop the show so that they keep it interesting and keep it challenging.
Yeah, it was something when Rob and I talked to Phil on Friday, Phil mentioned that he was kind of amazed at how they've managed to keep it fresh for this long, and every single season is something new and different. And yeah. I love it. Like, that's the thing that makes this show, I think, different from all of the other shows on the air.
Right, I agree. And you know, like I said, to think of just, you know, I mean, the writing and the production is like to think, okay, sandwich shop, and like what task are we going to do here? And the sandwich shop that makes, you know, 150 different sandwiches, and you have to memorize the order, and then you have to repeat the. It's like, who thinks of this stuff? Really, who thought of this? Who thought to go to Denmark and to, you know, go to the sandwich shop? And I mean, it's just like, it's amazing, you know. I mean, the name is really, it fits the franchise. I mean, it really is amazing what these people do. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's got to be the best job in the world to get to do what Bertram does and go around the world and figure out where people are going to go and what they're going to do. Like, that's got to be so much fun.
Oh, I mean, Bertram Van Munster, the executive producer, I mean, I remember meeting him my first day when I went to the open cast call. I didn't obviously really speak to him at length, but got to speak to him, you know, during our, you know, season a bit. And, you know, he's a very well-traveled and very wise man. And he's a guy who goes out and he scouts these locations. I mean, still does it as the executive producer, still goes out and does this stuff. And it's incredible. You know, he tells me he goes and he scouts the route at least once before they go on the race. So the amount of times he's been around the world... It's insane. Like, you know what I mean? That's obvious. I mean, it's incredible the amount of times it's been around the world. But, you know, he keeps doing some new things and keeping it fresh. So it's awesome.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to Jim and Misty for a second, because I think they struck me the first time they came out as being a team that's really a throwback to kind of the old school Amazing Race seasons. Because one thing that strikes me that I remember about your season, as opposed to almost every season that came after it, is that everybody was really into the idea, especially you and Margarita and Robin Brennan were really into the idea of coming in first on every single leg, even when you guys didn't get a prize. And it's not something that we've seen people be really into in a while, not until Jim and Misty have come in saying they're going to rack up more first place finishes than anybody. Do you think intensity is something that's kind of tapered off over time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think people they enjoy the experience. I think people really, you know, they get swept up in the excitement of being on the show, and you know, it's almost somewhat laughter and happiness, but we were really, really intense. And you could see in Jim Dodge, he's an intense guy. You know, he really wants to win. He really wants to bring it home. And I can relate to him. You know, I felt the exact same way when I was out there. You know, the show is interesting. You know, you run and you make it. You win the leg. And unfortunately, you have that bunching. You know, I was talking about the bunching. It's like you win a leg, and it's like, I know your hopes are up that you're going to get ahead of everyone else, and then all of a sudden you have to go to a port or an airport or a ship, you know, grab a ship that is not going to leave till 6 o'clock in the morning, and everyone ends up together again, and then you know the anxiety builds up again, and then the intensity builds up again, and then you're off again. yeah, that, I don't know why that has tapered off. Again, maybe it's because, you know, just the excitement of being on a show and being able to travel the world and all those things. But, that competitive nature, those competitive juices are so important for the show.
Yeah, well, it's something that we've talked a lot as, Rob and I are two people that have never been on the program, and we're just kind of trying to piece together things about the show from what we observe, and we are constantly saying on the air that we think that maybe if you get too obsessed with like every single individual leg, you kind of take your eye off the big prize. Do you think there's any truth to that? That people maybe kind of miss the big picture when they're that interested in racking up all those smaller prizes, or do you think there's momentum?
I think it's momentum. I mean, it's somewhat disheartening because, I remember in our season when we fell behind in the Sahara Desert. You know, we got lost for a while, and, we had always been at the head of the pack. And then all of a sudden we fell back to, like, sixth or seventh place. And that was really disheartening because it was like, wow, where do we go from here? And how do we pick ourselves up? And how do we get back into the front of the pack? Because there's a certain comfort that you feel when you're up in front. You know, it's just... It helps you psychologically, and if you're just like, well, we're not last, we still have a chance. I mean, perhaps, like I said, because they know how the game works now, that they may have a chance to all get bunched up again and all kind of like reset after each leg. We didn't know that. We didn't know that after each leg we would get reset. We thought that when you're done with the leg, your 2 hour your 2 hour lead was going to hold true for the next leg. So I think now, because they understand that, now I know that we're going to get bunched at the airport, they don't take it as seriously. Mm-hmm. But I think the momentum helps, at least for me. If I was racing again, I'd still want to win every leg. You know, my competitive nature, lasts out. That's why I'm a fan of Jim's. You know, he's the kind of guy that I really like.
Yeah, and the thing that I really respond to in Jim is if he was just in it to, get first place every single time, I would probably not like him as much as I do, but they're still taking time out to have fun, and I think that was something that I responded to a lot in you guys as well, because you were, for all the intensity and all the competitive nature that you were putting forth, you were also very much in the moment and enjoying your surroundings.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, like I said, it was magical. You know, I remember getting off the plane in India, and jumping in a cab and staring at the sun. And it was because of pollution. I don't know what it was, but I'd never been able to stare at the sun without sunglasses on. Just stare up at the sun like a big orange circle in the sky, and just thinking to myself, "Wow, like where am I? You know, what is this?" And. And I don't know how many other contestants from my season you spoke to, but we all, we would have fun, at the pit stops. We would just have a blast. We would all talk and laugh and joke and dance and everything else. And then, when this race started again, competitive nature would take over. But, we really enjoyed everywhere that we went. We had fun. We had a lot of fun. And that's what it's really about. It's also about having fun and enjoying the experience and enjoying the people. Everywhere we went, we got to speak to people. We got to learn a little bit about their cultures, about their food, about everything else. So it was quite an experience.
Yeah. So what was your favorite place?
My favorite place was Thailand, I would have to say, because it was just after we left India and, all the difficulties that were in India, in terms of transportation and, some issues of hygiene and things of that nature. And then we get to Thailand and it was just so beautiful and tropical. And this was before the tsunami. So we were in the area right there, Phuket and the Pai Plong Beach and all that area down there that was hit now years later. But it was just a paradise. It was just so beautiful. And, being there was like, to me, that was like the apex. I was like, that's what it made the whole race worth it. Even if I didn't get past Thailand, I said, the fact that I made it here has, made it all worth it because it was quite an experience. It was so beautiful.
In subsequent seasons, have you seen anything that stands out to you, something you wish you had gotten to do on your race?
No, I can't say anything. I mean, I am very, like I said, there are certain things about my race that, you know, I think will never be surpassed. You know, I think the walk through the Sahara Desert with dragging a camel with a pack on your back and all your stuff. I mean, that to me, and that evening, and then it was funny because I just read an article, Elise Dogenier, was interviewed, and she talked about a sandstorm. When we were in the middle of the desert, we had all these tents, everything was, you know, was set up, and we were having somewhat of a festival in the desert in the middle of the night, and there's, you know, food and dancing and everything, and all of a sudden, it's like, you know, these, you know, dune buggies with headlights coming down and saying, listen, you guys got to go, there's a sandstorm coming, and had to pack everything up and caravan out of the desert in the middle of the night. I mean, it was stuff out of a James Bond movie. You know? That's the best I could describe it. But you know, I've seen things that they've done in other episodes, and yes, would I like to do them for sure? But I would not replace what we did for anything.
Yeah, it was such a unique course because when you think of, like, if you had never seen an episode of the show and you were trying to put together a course that's a race around the world, some of the choices are kind of obvious and some of them are not so obvious. And I really loved that mix of getting to know of countries that wouldn't necessarily stand out to you as being the first place you'd go if you were going around the world.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And one thing I think the show is very much poorer for these days is starting around season 14 or 15, they stopped letting people talk to each other during the pit stops. And that's just crazy to me because having talked to you now and having talked to also to Team Guido and to Brennan, so many great stories come out of the times you guys spent between the legs. And it's just crazy to me that.
That's a shame because really we spent some amazing, amazing times just getting to know one another and laughing and joking. And it really added so much to the experience, you know. And you know, now it's really competitive. I don't think it's as pleasant. I mean, you know, we may not have won cars and trips and other things, winning legs, but we really enjoyed ourselves immensely. I mean, it was just a fun time.
And are you still in touch with friends you've made on the show?
Yeah, I mean, I still talk to Brennan, you know, occasionally on, you know, online. Kevin and Drew. Drew's moved out of the New York area, but I still speak to Kevin, you know, periodically. And you know, obviously Margarita, you know, we're divorced, but I mean, we obviously still speak. We have two beautiful daughters. Some of the people in the background, some people from casting and stuff like that I still speak to. So, you know, it was, you know, you go through that kind of experience and you're just something that, you know, it's a bond that you'll have forever.
Oh, sure.
Oh, and Karen Jefferson. Sorry. Karen also, who was, she was on our season as well. Her and I have a communication every now and then as well.
Yeah. So I was thinking it's probably a pretty good week to have you on the show because there was a big breakdown in teamwork that I think was kind of the main focal point of the episode. And I know this was something that, I mean, back in the day, it was something that stood out to me as communication issues were something that you and Margarita seemed to struggle with a lot.
Absolutely, yeah. And I saw that with Nisi, I guess, and her mom. I guess that's mm-hmm. And I felt, you know, I felt for them because, you know, I look at some of the other races, and I think to myself, wow, you know, these people are so kind and passionate, and compassionate, and loving towards each other, even when things are going wrong. And you know, I thought to myself, you know, wow, now I'm obviously older and wiser and calmer, so, you know, I probably wouldn't react the same way, but still, you know, I was very competitive, and there was communication breakdowns and arguments and, you know, and all those things. And, well, Margaret and I going in, we were separated, you know, we're married, but we're separated, so we had communication problems going in, so they just, they were exacerbated being under that kind of pressure. But, yeah, that's the challenge of the show. I mean, if you... cannot communicate, if you cannot, you know, be on the same page as to decisions that are being made, and they have to be made quickly. I mean, if you looked at the mother-daughter, when she said you were supposed to make a left back there and you didn't make it, I mean, it really, it's like seconds, you know, it 1 second could make the difference. And if you're not on the same page and not communicating well, it means the difference between winning and losing, you know, and it's, you know, I just feel for them because it's hard. It's very, very hard to be put under that amount of pressure, to want to win, and to not be able to communicate is a very frustrating feeling.
Yeah, it seemed like over time, like I was kind of rewatching a few of the season one episodes, and it looked like you guys started to fall into a rhythm where you figured out when it was okay for you to take charge and when to let your partner kind of make more of the decisions.
Correct. Yes, and that's hard to do, right? Because if you're arguing over who is going to be in charge, then you know your entire foundation is not present. So it's like, you know, if you're fighting over whose decision is going to be the one that we're going to follow, you know, it just becomes a nightmare. Like I said, it's just so much confusion and anger and anguish, and it's just those are the worst times that I remember on my my season, is that when we weren't able to communicate and we weren't able to. But once we got into a rhythm, it became fun because they're like, okay, we'll follow what you think. And you know, you kind of get to know who has certain strengths in what areas, and then you follow that person's strengths. And you know, I see other teams, they have absolutely no problems with it. You know, it's like I said, you know, they don't show any frustration towards one another. They're just kind of like, okay, we can't get through it. You know, they laugh it off and they move on. You know, and I really admire that as well. That's very admirable quality.
Yeah, but I think, over having watched so many teams like go through this, I think you can never tell at what point someone's going to end up getting set off and they're going to go to that place.
Oh,
I think, and I think every team is capable of it.
For sure, yeah, they crack. I mean, yeah, absolutely. At some point, you and it depends, you know, it depends as the show grows. Yeah. And then also, the other thing you have to keep in mind is there's so much footage. I mean, there's so much, you know, camera footage, you know, and if I followed you around, Jessica, for 24 hours for, you know, 3-4 weeks, you know, 99% of the time you could just be making great decisions and communicating very well, but all it takes is that 1 or 2 seconds of back talk or display of anger or something like that, and that can be put in the show, and then all of a sudden you think, well, this is how they've been communicating all day. That's not necessarily the case. It's, in a lot of cases, just editing. You know what I mean? That's what makes it the episode exciting. You know what I mean? And whereas, you know, if you were communicating well the entire day, but, you know, 5 seconds you had an argument over whether you're going to make a left turn or a right turn, and that ends up on the episode, then you think, oh, wow, these people are arguing all day long.
Yeah, and you can be sure any time a team is arguing, that's going to make it into the cut.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, do you think that Shelley and Easy being a parent-child team, do you think this puts them at an inherent disadvantage because that power balance is harder to navigate? Like, you're a parent. Do you think this is something that you could do with your daughter?
Well, yeah, my oldest daughter is still 15. She's so young, so she still listens to everything daddy tells her to do. But if she was an adult, I don't know. I think that would be very difficult. Particularly, that's a difficult dynamic, you know, parent, you know, mother, daughter, you know, in my case, separated, married people were separated. You know, it's those dynamics add to the stress, you know, because in their case, Niecy just wasn't, her mother knows, I guess it looked like her mother knows how to deal with her when she kind of starts to lose it, which is, I'm not going to address this. And then, so then it's a breakdown of communication. And I'm just assuming, just by watching whatever, you know, I saw in the last episode, but it seemed like she was just saying, you know, when they were on the mat, she says, when this goes away, then we'll be okay. Meaning when this attitude or this, you know, whatever goes away, we'll be okay. So they bring history. They bring a lifetime of history, you know, to the show. You know, in my case, you know, I was married for 10 years, and I was dating my wife for, 8 years prior to that. So, you know, it was a long time. There was a lot of history. Wow. The more history you have with someone, you know, the more history you have with someone, the more stressful it is, you know, and the more that can come up, you know, during these times. So that makes it tough.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I observed from kind of rewatching some of your old seasons next to what's on the air now is that the definition of like what constitutes a catastrophic conflict has also changed a little bit. And back when your season first aired, I was reading the recaps on Television Without Pity by Linda Holmes, and she used to refer to you as Loud Pushy Frank, and she would talk to about the Guidos as these sort of evil diabolical geniuses. And on the rewatch, you guys all seem like pretty nice people. And it seems like the definition of what you have to do to, you know, constitute a meltdown or a communication breakdown, it seems like that's changed quite a bit over time.
Sure, absolutely, because I mean, they could be a lot more intense now, because we're not nearly at that.
No, there's definitely, I would say, anything that happens, and this is something that we talk about a lot on the show with regard to Survivor as well, like the things that people really disliked on the earlier seasons of the show, like, you know, 13, 14 years ago, are very, you know, very much inconsequential in the face of things that they air now.
Sure.
Yeah. So who do you think of the teams that are on the current season, like who do you think has the most functional relationship dynamic?
Bethany, is that her name?
Bethany? Yeah, Bethany, the surfer.
Yeah, the surfers, I think they have a wonderful relationship. You know, he expresses nothing but love and admiration for his wife, which obviously he should because she's just a phenomenal human being. And, you know, their teamwork, the bikers, they're just the cyclist team. They're feisty and fun, and, you know, they're just... To me, they had that whole New York swag and attitude that I appreciate. The dentists, I think they have a great dynamic. I think they shouldn't be counted out. They're going to still be strong throughout the entire rest of the season, I'm guessing. I really don't see any weak teams. I mean, they all seem, you know, rather strong, and they have, at least thus far, they all have a chance at it, I see. I don't really see anybody that I say, the mother daughter, I think they're at a bit at a disadvantage because of the communication issues and because, you know, physically, you know, they're not, as well equipped as some of the other, you know, teams that are out there. But I think they're all strong teams. I think we'll see a very, very good season.
Yeah, it is one of the best casts, I think, that we've seen in a lot of years. There's nobody you look at and you think, like, this person was just here to fill a demographic and they're going to be out immediately. Like, everyone seemed like they had a fighting chance going in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I know the real estate agents, you know, the mm-hmm. I don't know, Barbie twins, they kind of look at Barbie twins to me. I think they took it a little lightly. You know, we're going to take out 12 pounds of makeup and go win the race. I mean, that's, you know, there's one thing about this race. It's humbling experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure Jim, you know, recognizes that. I mean, I recognize that. You know, in my season, I just knew that we were really being last and we were going to New York, that there was no way I was going to lose this race. You know, it's just impossible. I'm going home. There's no way I'm going to lose it. And, you know, you just never know what's going to happen. You just never know, and it's very humbling. So, you know, no matter how good you think you are, the slightest thing will knock you right out. So,
mm-hmm. And, I mean, in your case, it was just the matter of getting on a train 3 minutes after another team.
Right. I mean, well, in our case, it was knowing too much. In our case, mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know is that, you know, we were flying into Newark Airport, and we knew that the tunnels in New York can get really congested. We knew that the Lincoln Tunnel, the Holland Tunnel, sometimes could be just kind of, especially in the morning rush. I mean, you don't want to be stuck in that two-lane tunnel. You know, you could be in there for an hour and a half. So we, knowing that going in, said, you know, it's probably wiser to go to the George Washington Bridge because it's it's going to be a, you know, more wider lanes, you know, more lanes, more access, and we know how to get to where we're going. It just happened that morning there was no traffic going in to the tunnels, you know, but on your, any other day, your average day, we probably would have been an hour ahead of them. Because it was just, because we knew too much, that's what kind of messed us up, you know. Ron Brennan jumped in the cab and said, take us here. And the cab said, okay, I'll just go the way I know. You know, the easiest route. I'm just going to go that way. And because we knew too much, we said, okay, we're going to account for what we know. And that wasn't a factor. So it's funny.
Yeah, and it kind of became this running joke among the fans over the years that there's such a thing as the hometown curse, that if you ended ended the race in a place where you lived, it ends up hurting you more than it helps you. And I think it's been about half and half as far as I can recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in our case, definitely, we just knew too much. We thought we were going to use our experience and our smarts about getting around New York to our advantage. And you know, even though we did go the long way, we still were only about 2-3 minutes behind Robin Brennan. So it wasn't that far-fetched. You know, they had just run into a little bit of traffic, it would have been fine. But again, that's just one of those things that, you know, what you think is working to your advantage may not. And in our case, definitely did not.
Yeah, I mean, luck plays such a huge role, I think.
Oh yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, it could be the luck of just the cab driver. You know, you might have one cab driver that's incredibly slow. I remember when we were in India, and I just laugh because I remember we were running through India, and Robin Brennan had this cab driver that was just the slowest cab driver in the world, and we were behind him, and I just couldn't believe how slow this guy was, and I was hysterical in the backseat of the cab, because I said, wow, like, where did we find this guy, like, where did you pick this guy up? It's like, so, you know, it's really the luck of the draw. You just have, there's so many things that are out of your control on the race. I mean, you try to control the controllables, and then just cross your fingers for those things you have no control over, and you know, and there is a quite a bit of luck. You know, there is quite a bit of luck in this race.
Yeah. Now on Friday night, Rob and I were talking in our episode recap. This kind of came up that we had talked to the firefighters who had been eliminated, who were really great guys, and they seemed like they were trying to be very positive, but you could tell there was some negativity and a little bit of residual bitterness still there, and they really regretted how they had performed on the race. Was that something, did you ever feel any negativity about how you finished? Were you ever a little bit bitter?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, one thing, and I don't know how other people that you've spoken to have dealt with it, but I mean, it's an experience. It's hard to explain to anybody. Like, you are an ordinary person, ordinary citizen, and then you're thrust into the spotlight of, you know, this nationally televised show where people are watching, and they're watching your every move, and they are, you know, critiquing and criticizing your every move, and you're getting all this attention, and you're, you know, after the show wraps, you're doing radio shows and maybe television shows and talk shows and all this other stuff. And you know, what you thought was just, you know, one mistake, or, you know, you weren't proud of something that you did, is magnified, and it's like, so, you know, out there for people to discuss and people to pick apart. And it's like, you know, I wasn't prepared for that kind of, you know, that kind of scrutiny. I just, you know, I was like, wow, I'm just a regular guy. And like, all of a sudden now I'm like, on the mouth of people that I never thought that would know me, you know, and they're talking about me and, you know, not in a very good way sometimes. So, you know, the bright lights and all that comes with Hollywood, you know, kind of like, you know, sweeps you up, and then just kind of like you just go back home and you're just a regular person again. So you go from this ordinary person to this amazing experience and all this attention and excitement, and then all of a sudden you're back to your regular routine, and it's like, it's almost like a withdrawal. You know, it's almost like withdrawal. You know, it's like, wow, you know, what just happened here? You know, now I'm back to being just a regular person. And, you know, the bitterness of, like, you know, she's with people at work saying, oh, you know, you're such a dummy. Like, you came to New York and you lost a race. How could you lose a race in your own hometown? And, you know, people judging you for, you know, what you think is an extraordinary effort to get yourself around the world, to use your, you know, ingenuity, to use your will to get yourself as far as you did, to cross the finish line, to try to have some kind of, you know, personal, you know, success to yourself, and then for people to say, well, you're just dumb because you lost it at home. I mean, that really, it hurts, you know, especially, I'm sure, the firefighters, and I think they're the only, well, no, there's the college sweethearts, but they're, mm-hmm. like, you know, the only two, you know, big, strong, you know, kind of guys, and they're firefighters, and they're known to be physically fit and strong and all that, and, you know, they didn't perform well, and I'm sure, you know, they're going to get a lot of flack, you know, when they go home, and they're with the guys at home, and, you know, probably pick fun at them and stuff like that. So it's, you know, it really does affect you psychologically. I mean, for people who want to be on shows and they want to be on television, I mean, they have to be prepared. And I think people are much more prepared now. I think when people go on television shows or reality shows, they probably have a desire to be on television, probably have a desire to be a star of some sort, maybe have some acting experience. But when you're just an ordinary person and you go out and you get that kind of attention, and some of it may be negative, it's hard to digest. It's really hard to digest, and it makes you somewhat bitter. And I think, you know, personally speaking, I think I suffered from that for quite a while. It's like, you know, I thought I should, you know, I was very proud of what I did, but I didn't feel like I was respected for that. I felt like, you know, people just thought, oh, here's this, you know, dumb dude who just lost his race at home. You know, it was like, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think it takes until your memories of it are, you know, overwhelmingly positive?
Well, for me, it took a couple of years. I mean, you know, now I think back and I'm like, you know, I don't see anything negative about it. You know, now I laugh about it, but, you know, at the time it was tough. But I'd say I was fully, you know, healed, if that was the word I could use. Mm-hmm. I was fully healed like three years later. I think it took me about 3 years to just kind of digest it all and understand, you know, what victories that I should celebrate and not, you know, not worry about what people thought about me, and, you know, and celebrate my own victories. You know, one thing that, you know, I do say, you know, Margarita and I, we reconciled for a while after the race, and, you know, we got back together, and we had a beautiful daughter. You know, she's 10 years old now, and, you know, that's worth much more than $1 million. You know, it's priceless to have, you know, this beautiful little girl that came as a result of that, you know, experience, because if hadn't we not gone in the race, we would have not have reconciled, and we would not have had that beautiful daughter. And unfortunately, you know, a couple years later, we separated and divorced and went our own ways, but we have, like I said, we have something, you know, just beautiful human being that we could be thankful to the amazing race for. Yeah.
That's really incredible.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure I get some fan questions, because I went on our Facebook patron group and I asked a few people if they had anything they wanted to know, and we got some really great questions. And I'll start. Most of them have kind of one theme, but I wanted to, while we're still on this topic, Will Olson wanted to know, what was your gut instinct when you got on the train to Flushing Meadows Park? It seemed like you had an uncertain expression on your face while Margarita was jumping up and down in excitement.
Yeah, I wasn't. I wasn't, because so many times on the show, I just knew we were first. I mean, it was just like, I guess it was, you know, hubris or whatever. I just thought that there was no way they could have beat us. And when I got to, and I don't know if you remember when I was on the show, we would get to the man, I'd be like, how is it possible? Like, we just went faster than I mean, we couldn't have gone any faster. We couldn't have done it any better. And so I wasn't surprised by anything. And then when we got on the train, I had gotten used to the fact that I cannot celebrate anything until I actually saw it happen. Until I actually had my feet on the mat, I could not, you know, anticipate what was going to happen, because it was too unpredictable. Everything was too unpredictable. So, you know, I knew that, you know, there was all kinds of, you know, factors involved. So I wasn't necessarily convinced that we had won, you know, whereas I think, you know, Margarita just you know, she thought, like, well, we got here so fast, we didn't run into any traffic, we, you know, it was a straight shot straight from the airport, you know, at 55 miles an hour, late to the park. There was, you know, there was just no way anybody could get there faster. I mean, you know, we, because we think, you know, we know you have to drive through Manhattan to go to Queens from New Jersey. You have to go through through two tunnels, actually. You have to go through either Lincoln or Holland, and then either, you know, the BQE or, you know, something like that. So you actually either had to go through Manhattan or through Brooklyn, and we went straight around. And it was like, how could we lose? So I'm sure she, in her mind, was like, you know, we made it. And I just said, you know, there was too many times that I was surprised to take anything for granted. So I was a lot more cautious than she was.
Yeah. Now that's something that I don't think the episode ever made clear, that you guys flew into Newark, and that makes so much more sense now, because if you'd come into JFK, you would have been right there already.
Right. Correct. Yeah. But we turned into Newark, and it was like, well, we don't want to drive through Manhattan. You know, just we're trying to go across 34th Street or go across the beach. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. But again, you know, because we knew that was our disadvantage, because the Ron Brennan had no idea. They just said, hey, take us here. And the cab driver said, okay, I'll take the guy. However, I can get there, I'm going to get there.
Yeah, I would have made the same mistake. So almost everybody, and you're probably not going to be surprised, almost everybody wants to know what you think of the different major differences between the show now and the show when you were on it. Like Mike Bloom wanted to know if you like elements like the save and express pass as opposed to having a fast forward on every leg.
I prefer the fast forward. I don't really like, I mean, the save is, I don't know. I don't like the save because, you know, you think about two teams running to the end, and, you know, let's say a team gets stranded way behind and they have the save, and then another team, I don't know how it's going to be in practice. I was thinking about it. I was thinking, are they going to keep the team? So let's say two teams at the end of the leg get there, and one of them is going to be eliminated, but the other one that has the save, does that mean the team that comes in before them gets eliminated? You know, I don't know how that's actually going to work. I was thinking about that, but if you can enlighten me on that, maybe you know the rule. I don't know how they're going to work that, but I just don't think that's cool. I don't think it's fair, because you won one leg, but I mean, just because you won that leg, you could have, you know, you could come in 2 hours behind, you know, somebody else, and that team that came in 2 hours ahead of you could get eliminated because you have the save. I don't know if, I mean, that's what I was thinking about, so I could be wrong, but I prefer the fast forward. I think that was But, you know, and I'm biased, of course, because, you know, we had our rules, but I like the fast forward better than I like the save and the express time.
Yeah. Well, I think the way the save works is that it just automatically turns the leg into a non-elimination leg. So if you show up at the same time as another team, you both get to stay.
Oh, okay. Then that's cool, because last night there was on Friday there was a non-elimination leg anyway, so we got to keep this, you know, the save. So all right, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I found that particularly mind blowing because I thought that, you know, it shouldn't matter whether it was supposed to be a non-elimination leg or not. Like, you should have to give up that save. But that was just my opinion.
I agree. I said, wow, that's just unfair now.
Yeah, it's way too powerful. And one thing that I loved in the early seasons was that you had the opportunity to go for a fast forward on every single leg. And I know why they took that out. But nowadays, there's maybe one on the entire race. And it's just like, if you're in first place and that's the only one there's going to be, why not go for it? And there's no strategic element to it at all.
Exactly. It just gives you that much more of an edge, that much more of an advantage. No, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, they're brilliant in the way that they've developed this show, the way they developed the rules, you know, over the years. Again, I'm biased. I really like the old style. I really like the old style. I'm classic. I'm a classic TOR guy.
Yeah, original recipe.
Exactly.
Yeah, and another rule change that was pointed out to me that I had completely forgotten about, Yuli Klumper wanted to know, as a person who completed the huge majority of roadblocks for your team, do you think that you would have done equally well if the current roadblock split of 50-50 would have been in place?
Absolutely not. I mean, but again, when it came to our season, so many of our roadblocks were physically challenging. I mean, like Margarita wouldn't have been able to scale an ice wall in Alaska. After, I mean, they'll show you the other stuff. I mean, you had to trek through the snow for like a mile and a half. So by the time you got to the ice wall, you're just exhausted from walking, and then you're going to have to try to race yourself up an ice wall with a pickaxe and crampons, and it's just crampons, and it's so hard to do. I mean, like I said, I was in very good shape, and I almost felt like I was going to die, and I was so physically drained and exhausted. Like, and that could have been the sum of me doing so many of the physical tasks, but there were so many physically taxing tasks on our race that it would have been just so hard for Margarita to have been able to keep up, especially when you had other teams that were fit men, like, you know, Robin Brennan and even, you know, Team Guido, and I mean they were very fit, and you know, Kevin and Drew, not as fit, but I mean they were strong competitors as well. So it would have been very hard for them for her to do that. And so we definitely would not have done as well. I mean, the things that were more cerebral, I think she did those, which was, you know, smart. It was better because she is a smart person. And, the challenge of having to eat the food, that was an obvious that, you know, she could have done that one. But, I mean, you know, we would definitely not have done as well because it was just so hard to do.
Yeah, after those first few seasons, I saw them correct for that in a number of ways, and I think maybe they overcorrected. For example, you almost never see a team like Robin Brennan anymore.
Of course not, yeah.
Like two kind of alpha males who are very physically fit and very intelligent, they kind of try to, you know, weight certain traits over others when they're casting, and they've instituted the roadblock balance. And they've also made a lot of the challenges a lot easier. I think they could have done any one of those things, and they would have corrected for the imbalance in the first season. But maybe they've done too much.
Yeah, that's what I find. I find it seems, I mean, I know it looks, and I can't say that, you know, because I'm not there, but it just looks easier. I mean, it doesn't look like people really breaking a sweat too much. You know what I mean? It looks easier than when, you know, we were there, and they may have made it a little too easy now, you know, because they even the playing field a little too much. You know, what you thought was an advantage because you were, exceptionally fit just is out the window now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they want to make it unpredictable, but I think there's a fine line you have to tread between unpredictable and, you know, completely random.
Right.
I agree. Are there any other big differences that you note between, like, modern-day Amazing Race and early Amazing Race?
I think one thing that I do notice is people are much more comfortable in front of the camera, I think. Like I said, we were literally, in the first few seasons, you could see people were literally, like, more ordinary people. I think the tagline at the time was "Ordinary People on an Extraordinary Adventure." That was like the tagline. I think you see now people probably have, you know, probably come in, they've already had headshots, and they've probably done a little acting. They probably they're more attuned to the entertainment business and the entertainment world and television in particular. You know, so they, you know, I heard Phil talk about the soundbite thing. Like they know the language. I really didn't know the language. Like, you know, they probably talked to me for half an hour before they got, you know, 30 seconds of content that they put in, you know. So then, and they were probably like, God, I've got to talk to this guy for another half an hour that we could get something that we can use, you know. But, you know, people are very attuned to that now, and people are very, they're very aware of their persona, their, you know, their, the way they present themselves, the things that they, you know, they, I guess they just seem a little more guarded about, you know, what they allow to be seen and what they don't. I don't know if you see that raw emotion as much that you used to see back then, but, you know, that's just my opinion.
I definitely agree. Although I think this particular cast is a lot more, they seem like a lot more regular people than the last couple that we've had.
Right. This one, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but absolutely. I think you're right about the overarching trend. And I guess we'll close out with, you know, a question I guess we ask every single racer alum that we ever interview. Dan Heaton wants to know, would you do the race again?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. I obviously could not do it with Margarita again.
Right.
That's just not going to happen. But, yeah, I would absolutely do the race. I mean, you know, if I was given the option and the opportunity to do it again, I would jump at it without batting an eye. But I don't know if that day will ever come. But, you know, if it does and I am out there, wow, you know, that would just be another blessing that I would never, ever have dreamed or imagined.
Yeah, it's such a fantastic experience. And even, like, just to absorb the great stories and the, you know, the lessons that you've learned, it's something I'm never doing myself, but I'm so glad that people have had the opportunity to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, like I said, you know, I'm grateful to, you know, go down in the annals of history as one of the people that was able to do it, you know, and the first ones that were able to do it and, you know, get all the way around and cross the finish line and all the rest of that stuff. So, I mean, that's satisfactory to me in itself. But if I was given the opportunity to do it again, I'd be all over it.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, you're definitely a true pioneer of the amazing race.
Thank you very much, Jessica.
Yeah. So thank you, Frank, for sitting down and talking with us. This was really a fantastic interview. And I wanted to throw out some information to all of the listeners. If you're tuning into this on one of your iTunes feeds, we're going to have this one put up on the Reality Rehap-Ups feed or the General Interest Amazing Race feed, or you can get it straight from robhaswebsite.com. And make sure you tune in to all our great content this week. Feel free to rate us on iTunes and leave us some reviews, because that helps us grow in popularity. The more listeners we get, the better feedback we get, and the more fun our podcasts are. Make sure that you guys don't miss any of our Amazing Race content. Rob and I will be live right after the episode on Friday night to recap. I'll have another racer alum interview over the weekend, and I have a blog going up sometime over the weekend to recap everything that happened with the episode. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and thanks again to you, Frank.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all the fans out there for your support. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Have a great night, everybody.